What's up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Zach Attacks. I got plenty of good stuff coming up for you. We got music news, movie news, but this episode is really going to be an ode to Firefly, which brings us to our first thing in music news, which is that the Firefly Music Festival held in the Woodlands of Dover, Delaware, has officially been canceled. So, the Firefly Festival started in 2012 and has been held in Dover, Delaware up until 2022, which is when the last one happened. They said that they were going to take a year break and be back in 2024, but due to the silence, a lot of us knew that it probably wasn't coming back, and we just got the official statement yesterday that the festival is not going to be happening. They said they might bring it back when the time is right, but I have a feeling that that is not the case. A lot of the reasons I've heard that it's been canceled include a lack of attendance when the lineup started to switch from being something that was more of an all-age thing to kind of catering more to the younger people, and also the timing changing. After the pandemic in 2020 canceling that lineup, they switched the festival from being in June to being in September, and that took down the attendance a little bit, and also just like them not wanting to have this in Dover, Delaware anymore. So the festival was originally Red Frog Events out of Chicago, and then they were bought by AEG, who runs like Coachella and all the big festivals. And I think that Red Frog really cared about this festival, and once it moved to somebody who had all these other different pieces in play, like they didn't really have the same concerns about what was going on in Delaware. So RIP Firefly. We're going to be talking more about that later, but moving on to a more positive note in the festival world, we got the announcement for the lineup of the 2024 Aftershock Festival, which is going to be taking place from October 10th to October 13th in Discovery Park, Sacramento, California. So this lineup definitely wins best headliners, especially when we're talking about any of the metal festivals this year. We have Slayer on Thursday, Slipknot on Friday, Saturday we have Iron Maiden, and Sunday we have Motley Crue. And you know, that's just the tip of the iceberg on this thing. And then on the secondary stage, you have Pantera as a headliner for the first day, Five Finger Death Punch, then Judas Priest, and Disturbed. So even just like taking the lineup and picking it apart, like on Thursday, being able to see Slayer and Pantera together, like that is insane. And also the fact that this lineup has Iron Maiden, Motley Crue, and Judas Priest, who are like three of the main OG like metal bands that I still have to see. Like just looking at this, like there are so many great bands that make this worth buying a ticket. Now I'm not going to get super into the lineup here, but some of the other band names that are sticking out for me include like Drain is on the lineup. We got Lorna Shore, Flogging Molly. We have Scars on Broadway is going to be playing, Insane Clown Posse, plenty of good stuff. If you haven't seen this lineup yet, definitely check it out. Chances of me going to Sacramento, California are pretty low, but if there was a reason, this lineup would probably do it. And transitioning right into that, Drain also just announced their North American tour, which I actually just bought a ticket to. They're coming to the Union Transfer in Philadelphia on May 25th, and there's like 8 bands playing, so it's so worth checking out. The lineup has tons of openers on it, and we hit the jackpot with the Philly date. It has some of the best openers of the tour. If you're unfamiliar with Drain, they're a hardcore band that came out within the last couple years, and like they definitely don't take themselves too seriously, and they are just so much fun. Their live shows are insane, and it's gonna be especially insane with this lineup. So some of the support you could see on the tour includes Terror, Scowl, Angel Dust, End It, Madball, Regulate, King 9, Twitching Tongues, Mind Forced, God's Hate, H2O, Haywire, Trails of Lies, Mad, Cosmic Joke, Dead Heat, and Slugger. And on the Philly date, it's going to be Terror, Scowl, End It, King 9, Twitching Tongues, and Mad. So it's considered one of the beach party dates because it has a couple more bands than some of the other ones. And then sticking with hardcore news, but this is definitely a more funny kind of weird story. This was posted about on Metal Injection. The band's called Lorona, and apparently what happened was that they decided to part ways with their vocalist, Diego, due to his admission of a very disturbing and concerning behavior towards one of their bandmates and their partner. So what ended up happening was, dude wanted to sabotage the relationship of one of his bandmates, so what he started to do was give the guy estrogen when he didn't know, like putting it in like his pre-workout and stuff, trying to make this dude, I guess, like more feminine, and then like once he was his weakest, he was gonna like swoop in and take the guy's girl. super fucking weird. Like, what was his plan? He was gonna be like, hey, your man, he grew tits and has been crying all the time, so clearly you like me better now, right? And then also kind of funny, in the metal world, Judas Priest said that they have a bunch of unreleased songs that they worked with the team who wrote Never Gonna Give You Up by Rick Astley. So they wrote a bunch of songs with that team, and apparently they've never seen the light of day, and now Rob Halford's like, oh yeah, we should put these out. Also this week, we got the announcement for the lineup for Sad Summer Fest 2024, which is kind of like a Warped Tour kind of deal. Definitely a lot less bands, but it kind of tries to keep the same theme going, like a bunch of bands playing throughout the day, all in like the pop punk kind of world, except for here it's on one stage, and it looks like you're gonna get about 9 bands in the day. So the headliners this year are Mayday Parade and The Main. Both bands have played this several times already since it started, right after Warped Tour ended, but you really can't go wrong. They both have so many classic songs, like how could you not want to see them? And then we have The Wonder Years on there, who are one of my all-time favorite pop punk bands, if not my favorite. The fact that they're on there definitely makes me want to go. And then on the lineup we have Real Friends and Knuckle Puck, both of whom played plenty of Warped Tours. Real Friends I kind of stopped liking as much once they changed singers. I used to really like them, and now that I could just kind of take it or leave it, but I would like to see them at least once with the new singer. And then Knuckle Puck's been pretty consistent, not as great as their early work, but you know they're gonna throw some of those songs in there, and I haven't seen them in years. And then we also have We the Kings, the Somerset, who played the last time that I went to the festival, Hot Milk, Diva Bleach, Daisy Grenade, and Like Roses. Now, it's kind of funny, I was just looking at some of the older lineups, and either Mayday Parade or The Main have played this every year since it started, and this time, they're playing it together. And then finally in music news, this is kind of badass, so Olivia Rodrigo announced that for her sold-out tour for Guts, which is already sold out, she announced that part of the proceeds of all of the ticket sales are going to be going to fundraising for pro-abortion nonprofits. It looks like what they're going to be doing is they're going to be helping people in states that now have been affected by the new laws against abortion, help them find a way to be able to get to where they need to be. So super cool move by Olivia, and that's going to do it for us today in music news. So now moving on to movie news, the latest release of Kate Winslet's HBO show The Regime gives her a 13-year streak of positive Rotten Tomato reviews, which is something that I don't usually think about too much. Like when the movie's bad or TV show's bad, you don't always blame the actor or actress in the movie. But when it comes to Kate Winslet, it seems like she's just been able to make everything that she's a part of be great. So The Regime got an 89 on Rotten Tomatoes. Mare of Easttown, which was awesome, highly recommend checking that out, got a 95 on Rotten Tomatoes. And then Mildred Pierce, which she also worked on with HBO, got an 81 on Rotten Tomatoes. And then if you just look through all of the movies that she's been in, she's got an insane list here, like including, obviously, The Titanic, Eternal Sunshine for the Spotless Mind, The Reader, The Holiday, Avatar, she was in Divergent. I think probably the only movie that she's ever been in that doesn't have a positive Rotten Tomato review is Movie 43, and if you've seen that, it's like just a big old spoof movie with a bunch of actors and actresses in it anyway that are just throwing them in little skits. And if you haven't seen that in a while, highly suggest checking out Movie 43. And then also in movie news, and after 11 years with Kick-Ass 2 coming out in 2013, they've just finally announced that they're actually going to reboot it instead of continuing the series, and they have plans for a trilogy with the first movie called Fight School already having been shot. It looks like a lot of the original cast is going to be returning, so if you're a Kick-Ass fan and you've been waiting for the new one, it seems like you got a lot more of that story coming your way real soon. Next story up, Nicole Richie posted about a remake coming out for Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead. The original came out in 1991. We just got a trailer for the new one. I like this movie. I like the original at least, and I'm excited to see what they decide to do with a remake here, especially one with Nicole Richie in it. If you look up the cast on IMDb for the remake, Nicole Richie is actually the only name that really stands out to me, but the trailer looks pretty good, so if you haven't seen that yet, go check out the trailer, see what you think for yourself. I mean, at this point in time, I feel like we could talk about any movie that's coming out with a little bit more information, because everything's either a reboot, a sequel, something like that. Some of them are great, some of them just kind of, you know, feed into the money grab, but, you know, if you really think about it, the reason they do this is to keep franchises going. So, like, example, The Exorcist, which I was really excited for, the reboot that they did, was a huge stinker, but what it does is it keeps the name of The Exorcist and that franchise in everybody's mouth. Even if the remake sucks, it makes sense for them to continue to make these movies so that the next generation is aware of the legacy. And then in movie/TV news, because let's be honest, that's what this really is, AMC just had a 6-year debut high with the premiere of The Walking Dead, The Ones That Live. So I haven't watched Walking Dead in probably more than 6 years at this point. I think a lot of you are probably in the same boat. But after Rick and Michonne not being in a lot of the later seasons, they're back and they're part of this show now. Personally, don't think I'm going to check it out. I would definitely rewatch the first couple seasons of Walking Dead before I go and watch any new stuff that they have. But clearly, people still like this, and zombie TV shows are still not outdated, even though they were so oversaturated in the 2010s. And then finally, in movie news slash TV news, Only Murders in the Building have began filming for a season 4. So I really liked the first 2 seasons of the show. Couldn't really get into season 3 that much, but seeing as they're going to do a 4th season, I'm probably going to end up finishing the 3rd one just so I could see what's up with the 4th season. But, you know, really, the all-star cast is what makes this show. So you got Steve Martin, Selena Gomez, Martin Short, Meryl Streep, Paul Rudd. All right, and then moving on to new music news. We have a new song by Miley Cyrus and Pharrell called Doctor. Now, it's a really fun song. Miley's been on a super hot winning streak, and I could tell that this track is going to be no different. It's definitely going to be a hit. It's a really fun song. It's not as serious as, like, the last couple singles that she's had, and I definitely think that Miley's only going to continue to get better and better. And then we have a new song from Cardi B called Like What Freestyle, and the song's really good, especially considering all the beef that's really going down between a lot of the lady rappers. In this track, Cardi really shows up and shows how good she is with a pen, especially when you look at the Nicki Minaj diss that came out last month. Like, this is miles ahead of what Nicki Minaj is putting out currently, so definitely good for Cardi B. And then we have a new single from 21 Pilots called Overcompensate. It's going to be part of their new album called Clancy, which is coming out on May 17th. I thought that this song was just kind of okay. Wasn't really anything great. There's an edit version of the song, and then there's a regular version, and the regular version's a little bit longer. It's got, like, a really noisy intro to it. The song gets kind of, like, a little rappy after that, and it just doesn't have the same flair as their 3-album streak from Vessel, Blurry Face, and Trench. Moving on to the next one, we have DaBaby with Grammy Party. The song was okay. The baby kind of got really annoying after his hot streak, and I'd say that we most likely have seen the best of DaBaby at this point in time, but he does have a new track called Grammy Party that came out today. And then from Keith Urban, we had the song Messed Up Like Me. Now, I'm not a huge country fan, but I do dabble and listen a little bit, and I thought that this song was pretty solid. So if you're a Keith Urban fan, check out his new single. And then from Cage the Elephant, we have Out Loud, which is the 2nd single from their upcoming album, and this was pretty solid. It's a little bit more low tempo. It's not as fun as some of their early music was, but Cage the Elephant are still out there getting it, and I'm happy that they have a new album, just because that means that they're going to be touring again, and they are a fantastic live band. And then moving into the metal world here, we have a new single from Knock Loose called Blinding Faith, and this track is just an absolute monster. It is so good, it is so heavy, the lyrics are really cool, and their new album, You Won't Go Before You're Supposed To, comes out on May 10th. I actually saw, like, the track list, and it has a song called Slaughterhouse 2 on it, which is, of course, referencing their song with Motionless in White, and it looks like we're gonna get a Chris Motionless feature on this album. And then finally, from Slaughter to Prevail, we have their new track, Conflict, which is just about as heavy as it could possibly get. If you don't know anything about this band, they're Russian. Alex Terrible, the lead singer, he has a pet bear, and he doesn't need a microphone to be able to scream loud enough for the entire crowd to hear him, and that's just the vibe you're getting from the track. It's 2 minutes, it's heavy as hell, and it's just insane. Definitely check that one out. If you're into this type of stuff, there's no way you haven't heard of Slaughter to Prevail. And then new albums that came out this week, we got Blue Lips from Schoolboy Q. This is his first album since 2019, so 5 years ago he released Trash Talk, and I was a huge fan of this album. I think that a lot of people kind of overlooked this album, but I think that Blue Lips is gonna get a lot more attention. It had some really great tracks on it. Blue Slides on there is clearly an Ode to Mac Miller, really liked that song. Lovebirds was great. Ohio. Fox was probably my favorite song on there. First was really solid. And Back in Love was a lot like what like a Playboi Carti song sounds like, but at the same time, like, it was just so much better hearing something like that come from somebody like Schoolboy Q, which just had like that little bit more lyricism that really pushed the song a little bit further. I think that Schoolboy Q's new album is definitely one of the best new rap albums to come out so far this year. And then from the lead singer of Iron Maiden, Bruce Dickinson, we have his first new solo album since 2005, and it's titled The Mandrake Project. It's like a serious concept album with a full storyline to it. I listened to this while I was driving today, so I didn't catch all of the storyline, but I do know that all of the songs sounded really good, and they all very much sounded like Iron Maiden. Like, no doubt about it, it's a different band backing him, but the tracks all sound pretty on par with all the music that they've made. Personally, at this point, I'd rather just listen to their old stuff than listen to any new stuff, but the new stuff is certainly not bad. In fact, Bruce Dickinson already is recording the follow-up album to this, so nobody's waiting for as long as they did last time to get a solo album from Bruce Dickinson. And then we also got a new album from That Mexican OT, who I've never listened to before, but I saw a lot of hype around this album, so I figured I'd check it out, and I really liked it. He has very much a flow similar to The Baby, which he even mentions on the album. Second track on the album features The Baby on it, but this is a lot of fun. Doesn't take itself too seriously. I think Function was probably my favorite track on the album, but Twisting Fingers was also really good. Like I said, doesn't take itself too seriously. It's a lot of really fun rap songs. I mean, and OT's got bars, for sure. First time listening to him, but it definitely won't be the last. This is definitely something I'll be listening to again when I'm like driving, vibing to. And then we have a new EP from the now independent Meek Mill called Hedonism. The songs sound a lot like Meek Mill. The first track sounds a lot like Dreams and Nightmares. The third track on it actually sounds a lot like a Ice Spice song, which is kind of interesting. Now, Meek Mill's got some interesting stuff going on right now. I'm not going to get into it, but just Google Meek Mill and Diddy. I'm not going to talk shit, but check that out. The EP's pretty solid. If you like Meek Mill, you're definitely gonna like this. It has features from 504 and Future. Future really shows up on it. And then the final new album from the week I'd like to talk about is from Games We Play. It's called Life's Going Great. And from listening to the record, I'm gonna say life doesn't really seem like it's going that great for Games We Play. And I actually got the chance to see them open up for Fall Out Boy on their tour this past summer. And the energy was really good live. They were really fun seeing them in front of you. It has very traditional pop punk sound to it. But see, the problem is that this sound has been done so many times already. And the lyrics on this are so repetitive in terms of the things that are typically talked about in pop punk. Like, there's a lot of just self-deprecation throughout the whole thing. And I'd say that if you find that you're relating to this stuff, much like I did in my late teens and early 20s, I would say go seek help instead of relating so much to the damn lyrics. So bands like Real Friends or Knuckle Puck, who we talked about earlier, very similar vein to them. But the lyrics to this are just a little bit more cringy. Like, there's some lines on here that I don't know if I would have been comfortable putting out. This is the first full-length album to come out by the band, and hopefully they can only get better from here. They have plenty of time to figure out a new game plan, to figure out what kind of games they should play. And I'm still going to check out what they do next, but definitely not that great. It'd be hard to give this album anything over a 5 just because it sounds so much like everything else. All right, moving on to movies I watched this week. So the first one I'm going to talk about is from 1991. It's called Fried Green Tomatoes. And I think Tori put it perfectly. I walked in when she was watching it and she said it was kind of like Forrest Gump. And it was definitely like Forrest Gump, especially in the vein of it being somebody telling their life story essentially to somebody else. And the movie's really good. It deals with a lot of different issues, and I definitely was surprised. I've never seen this before. I remember having it on VHS but never watching it, so glad finally got to see it. It's listed as a comedy and a thriller, which is an interesting combo. You definitely don't see those two next to each other too often. And it stars Kathy Bates and Jessica Tandy. Like I said, it came out in 1991, but I think that there's a lot of issues and topics in this movie that are very relevant now that somebody would appreciate maybe more than ever. And then the second movie that I saw this week was American Fiction, which is nominated for Best Picture this year. And so far, I think it would be a top runner for me. I've only seen a couple of the movies still so far, and I'm going to try and knock most of them out this week. But American Fiction is about an author who has a lot of tragedy kind of going on in his life, and he's an African-American, and he's very upset by the way that white America kind of treats black entertainment and the way that they kind of are the ones that, you know, have a say in how it comes out, and then they're the ones that kind of ingest the media itself. So he decides to write a book that is kind of like a fuck you to the publishers and all the people that are creating this kind of content, and the publishers love it, and they want to put it out, and they want to give him more money than he's ever gotten for anything he's written before. And he's got all of these things going on in his life that make it so he has to take it. And, you know, I don't want to spoil too much here, but I highly would recommend this movie. Easily like an 8 or a 9 on a scale of 1 to 10 of how good this thing is. And then the final movie that I'm going to talk about that I watched this week is also nominated for Best Picture, and it's called Maestro. It's actually on Netflix, and it's a biographical film about the life of Leonard Bernstein and his wife Felicia Montealegre. The movie starts with how he became a famous composer, and then goes into them meeting, and at the beginning of the movie he actually has a boyfriend, so the movie goes a lot into the relationship of him and his wife, and then also him on the side having all of these relationships and affairs with men as his fame grows and keeping it under the covers. I feel like you go through most of the movie really not respecting Leonard Bernstein that much in terms of his relationship with his wife, and it kind of turns around towards the end of the movie. I wasn't too familiar with this story. Maybe some of you are and know about Leonard Bernstein, but I didn't know anything other than that this movie was nominated for Best Picture and had Bradley Cooper in it before I started it. It also has Sarah Silverman in it, and Carey Mulligan plays the part of Felicia. All right, and then finally for our top five list for this episode, we're going to go back to our little tribute to Firefly, RIP Firefly. We're going to talk about my top five favorite performances that I saw at Firefly. And at number five, some of you are going to find this controversial, but Machine Gun Kelly in 2021. So I was up really close for Machine Gun Kelly. I was actually wearing a Slipknot shirt, and this is right at the time that his beef was going on with Slipknot. Now, I really enjoyed the album Tickets to My Downfall. I did kind of feel like it was a fresh take on pop punk. It was different than listening to like the Games We Play album. It kind of had a little bit more of a flair to it and different energy than most of the pop punk music does, and for that reason I respected MGK for this, but I didn't respect him fucking with Slipknot and Eminem, two of my all-time favorite artists. But my plan was, I was like, I could throw the Slipknot shirt at him. And as soon as he started, he was just super captivating. He put on an awesome performance. He was very engaged with the fans. He had somebody come up and do a duet with him for one of the songs, and there was a point where he smoked a joint on stage. He smoked a bunch of cigarettes, but the speed that this man could smoke a joint at was top tier work, top tier performance. And for that reason, MGK hits the number five spot in favorite performances I saw at Firefly. And then at number four, we have Weezer. This was in 2014, the first time I went to Firefly, and I actually stayed at a hotel this year. It was the only time I didn't camp, and all of my friends were tired of Firefly. Everybody wanted to leave, and I was like, no, Weezer's playing early tomorrow. Like, I've never seen Weezer before, and I'd love to get to see them. So ended up having one friend that stayed with me, and we went for the first half of the last day of 2014. Got to see Weezer, and Weezer played like 16 like super hit songs. The crowd had a different energy to it than I expected at Firefly. Everybody was getting it a little bit more, and like there were crowd surfers and all of that, and I wasn't expecting that. I kind of expected Firefly to be a little bit more mellow, and the energy for Weezer the first time I saw them was just unbeatable. And then at number three, in 2016, seeing Blink-182 at Firefly. So I remember I had a huge group of people I was with that year, and everybody was kind of like, yeah, we're gonna kind of stand back a little bit for Blink-182, and I was like, no, I'm not gonna do that. It was the last day of the festival. I drank a couple beers and found myself up with people that said that they were waiting like 6 hours to be there, and I just kind of stumbled my way through the crowd and made it up, and you know, crowd surfed and sang along every word with a bunch of diehard Blink-182 fans, and I never thought that I was going to get to see them. I saw them a couple times after this, but, you know, obviously this was during the Skiba days, but of all the times that I got to see Blink-182, this was definitely my favorite, and easily my favorite performance that year of Firefly, for sure. And then my first and second favorite performances I got to see at Firefly Festival are kind of like a two-for-one deal. It was 2018, and Eminem was headlining. He's my all-time favorite artist, and the fact that I was going to get to see him in Delaware was huge. So, woke up super early that day. I had plenty of friends that wanted to hang out, like, playing drinking games and all that's part of, like, the most fun part of Firefly. But instead, nah, we are on a mission. We were going to wait all day to see Eminem front row. So, we get in, and that day is just stacked. So we start the day by getting to see Royal Blood, who were friggin' awesome. It was the first time I'd ever heard of them. And then after them, Lil Wayne played, like my second favorite rapper of all time. And he put on an awesome set, and we were up against the barricade for every moment of it. Seen Lil Wayne plenty of times, but never like that. And then after that, on the same stage, the Killers played, and I got to see the Killers front row. They brought up a kid to play drums, and he absolutely knocked it out of the park. And after that, finally got to see Eminem headline on the Firefly main stage and put on an absolutely crazy show. Shout out to my brother, the only person that would wait 12 hours with me to see Eminem. And for that fact alone, getting to see my favorite artist of all time in Dover, Delaware, Firefly is surely going to be missed. But hey, guess what? There is a Fish Festival that is going to be taking place. The band Fish, the jam band. So currently, they are booked for 4 days playing at the same festival grounds starting August 15th. So if you're a Fish fan, you like jam bands more than you like Eminem, Dover, Delaware is about to make your musical dreams come true as well. But really, like, Firefly is going to be super missed. Like, not even just looking at, like, my favorite performances. Some of the other stuff was even better. Like, the favorite, like, moments playing Can Jam and drinking games and all that. And, you know, for 4 days having no responsibility and only having to drive 40 minutes to see some of your favorite artists in the world. Some of the best vibes from Firefly, like, looking back. Seeing Kesha, seeing Lil Dicky, Fetty Wap, 21 Pilots, my brother being super drunk when we saw Jimmy Eat World and throwing up in the pit, and everybody being like, you need to let him go, and I was like, nah, he's fine, and 5 minutes later, he's back in the pit getting it with everybody. Seeing Lil Xan at 1 o'clock in the morning, absolutely trashed, right after everything happened with Lil Peep and X, and him just going super hard, like, won't forget that. Seeing Foo Fighters the first time I went, actually getting to see Bob Dylan at this festival, seeing Waka Flocka Flame with all my best friends. I remember there was a mosh pit, and all my favorite people around me were all in the pit watching Waka Flocka Flame go hard in the motherfucking paint, and a little teardrop came down my eye as the set was ending, because I knew what a great moment we had all just had together. Seeing Travis Scott, Vampire Weekend, Post Malone, Tyler, the Creator. I remember I got to see Pretty Lights. I'm not the hugest EDM fan, but people were just like having sex all over the place while Pretty Lights was playing. So definitely a lot of shit went down on the Woodlands grounds in Dover, Delaware for the Firefly Music Festival. And I'm just super grateful that this was something that existed around me while I was in, like, high school and college. Like, it doesn't get any better than that. Yeah, you know, we knew that this news was coming for a while. I had a feeling it was definitely going to get canceled. But now that we have the official announcement, RIP Firefly, and this has been